Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm really pleased to see so many up at this early hour and 20-some degrees in New Orleans. I don't think anybody's going to Bourbon Street today or tonight. It's an interesting position to be in as the last presenter. You sit and you think about what you put together, and then you see your that slide was there. Yes, that's been done, and she did that one, and he did that one. So it's like, let's go out and move and see you tomorrow. this is my last official responsibility for APHA. It's been a great 3 years as president-elect, president, me, past president, and I've grown to love this organization over the many decades. And I'm also within the conversation this morning about when is it time to step aside and do something else. As I've reached my 69th birthday, I'm trying to figure it out. No. So part of what I'm going to say this morning is in reference to the work that APHA has been doing to build a strategic plan and to push this notion of having the healthiest nation in the world in a generation, and what that means. And so what I think I'm going to do, because of the time that we have allotted, is go right to the end and then come back and try to fill in some of the blanks. The bottom line take-home message for me as it relates to this organization and all organizations is that you cannot do that. You cannot build the healthiest nation in any generation without a primary focus on health equity, social justice, and human rights in a very basic, organized fashion, based upon some of the principles that we've learned about building movements and some of the history that's there. We don't have to go very far to look at the history of building movements. We have examples in the last 50 years of so many successful movements. To think that we can't figure out how to do that, or we don't know where to find the resources, I think is a bit mistaken. So our first order of priorities would be to make that our primary goal, our primary mission, to build your healthy nation, but you must do it through a focus of health equity, social justice, and a recognition that it's a basic human right, which in fact sets the entire stage for how we go about doing this work. Now that's the last take-home message. So let me go back to an introduction. I often like to use this slide because there's something in this slide that tells me, just by virtue of the fact that this woman and these three boys who are our sons are alive, says that these kids are going to be more likely to be in the prison industrial complex than maybe in college in some estimates, more likely to die quicker, have more unhealthy lifestyles, more likely to be high school dropouts, and all the things that are associated with that by virtue of the fact that there are three black kids living with a single mom in this country alone. Yeah, that's my family. I just thought, throw that in there.
What are you?
You have to guess. Yeah. Yeah. My mother, by the way, is now 96 and lives with her 78-year-old boyfriend. So we call her the original cougar. I also thought I'd start the formal presentation by just putting some inspirational thoughts from things that I just find very fascinating. This is, you know, all know who Desmond Tutu is. And I don't try to read slides, but this one is very poignant for me. If we could but recognize our common humanity, that we do belong together, that our destinies are bound up in one another's, that we can be free only together, that we can survive only together, that we can be human only together, then a glorious world would come into being where all of us lived harmoniously together as members of one family, a human family. But the next quote is from Karl Rowan. It is often easier to become outraged by injustice half a world away than by oppression and discrimination half a block from home, or half a block from here, half a block from Ferguson, or half a block from the Bed-Stuy, or half a block from Fruitvale Station in Oakland, California. And we can go on and on and on and on, citing examples of what is the basic principle of social injustice that continues to exist in our country. As public health professionals, sometimes we have a hard time grasping that. The notion that maybe the most important thing we can do as public health professionals is attack the injustice that continues to exist in this country and around the world, but the first step, you know, let's take care of business at home first, and finding ways to do that would be the ultimate expression of our commitment to public health and justice and equality. But some of us are, I think, a little afraid of that because of what the implications are. We talk about social determinants of health and upstream and downstream. And when I talk to my students and my colleagues about this, they say, you know, I can't end poverty by myself, or I can't end racism by myself. So it's something I think should happen, but I don't know how to do that. Well, movements is the prime mechanism for how you do that, which is set those goals clear up front when you organize to make things happen. And you've had a lot of slides about movement building, so I'm not going to go spend much time on them. Other than remind you, in this instance, that there are different kinds of connections. There are collaborations and there are partnerships, one more specific than the other, but the commonality is that the vision and the ultimate objectives are the same, the goals are the same, so they're building their own individual interests by organizations and agencies and others to come together around a single purpose. Being about the process of developing a collective consciousness of that purpose, so that we are not locked up thinking like we're all robots, but we have the same sense of the importance of freedom, justice, and equality, as was pointed out by a previous speaker, and the notion of the existence of inequities that must, in fact, be eliminated. So this is a classmate of mine. And I talk about him a lot because his paraphrased definition of insanity, the one that says continuing to do the same thing in the same way but expecting a different result, is insanity. It's like we're kind of insane in the way we've been approaching this, because for years now we've been talking about the medical model versus the public health model. We've been talking about getting involved versus not getting involved, being a paid worker for the health department so you can't do what you can. Well, you know, Einstein was telling us that's not getting us where we need to get to. And if we continue to do that, we're never going to get there. It's a shift in thinking and a shift in action and a shift in motivation and a shift in reaching out to who we are connected to. I'd like to use the example of social determinants of health, where Einstein would say, you guys have been doing the medical model forever, and every year you look at trying to find a way to close the gap in excess death, and guess what? It never goes away. Well, he would say, because you're doing the wrong thing. We should be looking upstream, which we all know about, to find ways to address the issues and then consider ourselves finally sane. And I have no idea how much time I have left. Community empowerment is the other important principle here. We talk about it a lot, but it's really critical. This movement that we're talking about, in my opinion, has to be a grassroots movement. We have a role in helping to assist, perhaps pave ways to get connections and information and build bridges for other organizations and agencies. But just the successful movements have been grassroots movements based upon the people's involvement who have suffered the greatest injustices. And in this context, we can all relate to that. So community empowerment becomes a very important process in building power, looking at determinants of health, looking at quality of life issues, and making those the primary focus of the work that's done at the community level. For the two or three people in the room who have not had seen a definition of health equity, I figured I'd just put this one back on the table for you for two reasons. Number one, look at the words that are the antonyms, the kind of the opposites of what we want. Bias, discrimination, inequity, injustice, partiality, partisanship, thank you, prejudice, unfairness, unreasonableness, injustice. That's the enemy. That's what we're fighting. The other side of the coin, for those who, again, have not seen the definition of equity, this is one that we work with, Paula and several other people recently around this definition, looking at all people, highest attainable level of health, valuing individuals, focused on ongoing efforts, assuring conditions of optimal health, and addressing historical contemporary injustices, which is something that we have to continue to look at, that in many populations, Native Americans, African Americans, there's this historic trauma and microaggressions which continue. That's something that many people don't know about. It's like you walk into a store and to buy something, and all of a sudden somebody's following you around thinking you're going to steal it because you happen to be brown or black or speak a different language. Let's skip that one. And social justice as our principle, the application of those principles of justice and fairness, which is, I think, the big issue. When you talk about justice, it's about fairness. What is fair? Is it fair? 5 minutes. Is it fair that I have 5 minutes left? I get 30 seconds extra for that. So, you know, we saw numbers on infant mortality. Is that fair that a black child dies 2.5 times greater than a white child in the first year of life? Or is it fair that going for employment or a job is largely based upon how you look and what your name is and how you speak. These things, in the basic elements, are not fair and obviously have to be addressed in every opportunity we have. So this notion of building health equity movement and social justice movement as the preeminent part of what we do, just a couple of points on here. Social movements have brought about the most significant changes for racial, economic, and gender justice, without question. So there's where we should look for our models to make our way through this effort. Movements define their sustained groupings, broad-based, long-term transformation is the ultimate objective of social movements in this context. Just keep those in mind. So these are a couple of examples of some of the outward appearances of organization and movement, looking at justice, take on an expansive vision and aligned strategies. This goes back to the earlier comments about different organizations and agencies who may have slightly different aims and goals coming together around one common theme. And in this case, it's equal rights and justice. And it doesn't, there are, again, as I said, the examples are out there. The gay rights movement, the women's movement over the past decades, the black power movement, the cultural nationalist movement. There are so many things we can look at as examples. And it has been the actions of people most impacted by injustice that transformed our societies, systems, and institutions, as well as our hearts and minds. And there's the iconic picture that we all know. The civil rights movement. There's Martin Luther King in the front. There's black, brown, white, young, old, everybody locking arms around a common theme. And I believe we can and should do that. Our common theme should be health equity and social justice and the right to health. And APHA, any organization, and I'm stepping down as immediate past president, so any organization that has to rely on corporate funds, donations from the institutions that continue to run this country and continue to be a part of the specter of injustice and racial injustice and gender injustice, it's going to be pretty tough for that organization to build and be an active leader in this movement. To say we're going to be, our movement is building the healthiest nation in a generation, it's very nice, CDC money, RWJ money, NIH money. But you start talking about health equity, social justice, and ending injustice, and that the existence of these things today are socially unjust. They're human rights violations, as a matter of fact. If health is a right, and large groups by definition do not have access to that right, that human right, that's a violation of human rights. Now, if we're talking in that context, are we going to get money from Ford Foundation and Kellogg, maybe Kellogg? I don't know, but I only put it out there for our consideration as we move ahead as an organization. What is our role in finding the path to building this movement that we all say we want and need? So, a couple of conclusions. 1 minute. I think I'm going to make it. There is an inextricable relationship between health status and social determinants. There's not a question anymore about that relationship. There's an undeniable health status inequities resulting in literally hundreds of thousands of excess deaths and morbidity among specific populations every year. No question about that. The right to health is real and must be equitably respected. Economic equity, empowered communities, and system reform are critical. And there is no more important principle of the national movement to be the highest, healthiest nation in the generation than health equity, social justice, human rights. And that the time is now 30 seconds. It's very good. So I'll leave you with a couple of thoughts. Not for you to read this necessarily, but it's a risky business. If it's for real, it's risky business. People have gone to jail. People have lost their jobs. People have lost their lives building movements and executing movements for the rights of people. So it is a risky business. And the poem says the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. He who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, and is nothing. He is a slave in certitude. And the only way to be free is to take a risk. So I leave that with you and go back to my first slide to show you my family. My middle brother has now passed away, but my mother is still going strong, as I said, with her boyfriend. Of 2 seconds. I found out about this dude. My mother was having some issues with passing out, said, Mom, maybe it's time for you to think about assisted living facilities. So we did some work and found a couple of places. I called her Saturday morning about 7:30. I said, Mom, I found a place. I think you're going to like it. She said, you know, I don't think I need that anymore because Preston is coming around on a regular basis now. I said, okay. So I said, being her son and the youngest son, I said, you tell Preston, if he doesn't take care of you properly, I'm going to come to the Bronx and I'm going to kick his ass. And she said, oh, you can tell him yourself. Thank you.